Okay, so you know that huge book of mental health diagnoses, the DSM-5? It pretty much like puts people into these boxes, right? You either meet the criteria or you don't. But have you ever wondered if that kind of like black and white way of looking at things, I don't know, maybe oversimplifies how complex human experience actually is?
That's a great question, and one we're going to explore today.
It really does feel like it flattens that whole human spectrum, doesn't it?
It definitely can, and that's where this concept of spectral binary comes in. It provides a completely different way of understanding mental health.
And what is spectral binary exactly?
Well, think about it this way.
Okay.
Instead of those fixed categories, the DSM uses spectral binary, imagines things like language, emotions, even behaviors as these tonal fields.
The tonal fields.
Yeah, it's like having a soundboard with tons of dials.
Okay.
Each dial can be set anywhere from 0.00 to 1.00.
Ah, so instead of just on or off switches like the DSM-5.
Right, it's about gradients and nuances.
Okay, I think I get it.
So it's not just about whether someone has a symptom or not,
Right.
it's about the intensity or flavor of that symptom.
Like how strong it is.
Exactly, almost like tuning into a specific frequency on a radio.
And with the DSM, it seems like you're either on that station or not.
Yeah. Draws these hard lines and defines disorders. Spectral binary, on the other hand, focuses on this idea of resonance.
Okay.
It suggests that what we see as separate, distinct conditions in the DSM might actually be different points along a spectrum.
So instead of separate boxes, maybe it's more like a sliding scale.
Precisely. And this could help us see all those little variations and subtleties that those hard lines in the DSM might be missing.
And in this deep dive, we're going to see how this spectral binary lens plays out when looking at some specific diagnoses from the DSM.
Right.
We're going to focus on ADHD and autism.
Good examples, those two.
Why did we pick these conditions to put under this spectral microscope?
Well, one reason is that their boundaries can be really blurry. The way ADHD and autism show up in people can be so different.
Right.
And because of that, there are a lot of misdiagnoses.
So they really highlight where that either-or approach of the DSM might not be enough,
Exactly.
and where that more nuanced spectral understanding could be super helpful.
I think so.
Okay, so how does spectral binary actually read the DSM?
Well, it doesn't just assign numbers to the diagnostic criteria.
Right.
That wouldn't really work.
No.
Instead, it's more like spectral binary treats the DSM-5 like a piece of music, like a sonic score.
Okay.
It interprets each criterion through these tonal axes.
Tonal axis,
Yeah.
like dimensions of sound.
Kind of. And it uses three main methods to do this.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first is called emotional frequency mapping.
Interesting. What's that?
Well, it basically takes the language used to describe symptoms and decodes it into these numeric emotional signatures.
So, for example, if someone says they feel frustrated when they have to do a certain task,
Right.
spectral binary would analyze that word frustrated and give it a specific numerical value on like an emotional frequency scale.
Exactly.
Okay, and what's the second method?
So the second is called spectrum tension analysis.
Spectrum tension analysis.
Now, sometimes in a DSM diagnosis, you run into contradictory stuff
Okay.
or things that are kind of ambiguous,
Right.
and that can make things really tricky.
Sure.
But spectral binary doesn't see these things as deal breakers.
How so?
Well, it looks at them as spectral tension.
Spectral tension.
Yeah, like different emotional or behavioral frequencies that are all vibrating at the same time.
So it's not that the person is being inconsistent.
Right.
It's that they're experiencing all these different frequencies at once.
Exactly. And this could actually be a really important part of their individual profile.
Okay. I like that shift in thinking. It's like instead of an inconsistency that throws off the diagnosis, it actually becomes a valuable piece of the puzzle, showing how all these different signals are interacting. So what's the third method that spectral binary uses?
Okay. The third one is called relational drift detection.
Relational drift detection.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Well, it recognizes that symptoms aren't these fixed things.
Like they can change.
Yeah, they can fluctuate depending on all sorts of things.
Like what?
Like the time of day, the environment the person is in, even the people they're with.
Oh, interesting.
And relational drift detection tries to measure and map these changes.
So it acknowledges that human experience is dynamic.
Exactly.
So instead of asking what's consistently wrong, it's more like what frequency is this person expressing at this moment and where's the friction happening?
You got it.
It's a totally different way of approaching diagnosis.
It is.
All right, so let's dive into those case studies we talked about,
Okay.
ADHD and autism.
Yeah.
Now, the DSM often treats shared traits between these two as problems, like things we need to figure out so we can land on one diagnosis or the other.
Right.
But you talked about this earlier, using the idea of a cord.
Yes.
How does spectral binary make sense of these overlaps?
Well, let's think about some of those shared traits. Things like executive dysfunction.
Which is.
You know, difficulty with planning, organization, working memory.
Right.
Or challenges with managing time.
Okay.
Or even being super sensitive to sensory input.
Uh-huh.
These are things you see in both ADHD and autism.
Right.
The DSM tends to view those as clues to figure out which diagnosis is the right one.
Right, right.
But spectral binary sees these as harmonic overlaps.
Okay.
Almost like different instruments in an orchestra playing the same notes.
So they're not signs of one condition versus the other.
But not necessarily.
But more like fundamental parts of neurodivergence that can just show up in lots of different ways.
That's a really good way to put it.
So you're saying it's about recognizing that these experiences are connected.
Yeah.
Not trying to force them into separate categories.
Exactly.
Okay, so another concept that comes up a lot, particularly with autism, is masking.
Right.
That's where someone tries to hide their autistic traits to fit in socially.
Hmm.
Sometimes they're doing it consciously, and sometimes it's more subconscious.
Can be both.
But how does spectral binary deal with something like masking, since it's not even an official part of the DSM criteria?
That's a great point. And this is where I think spectral binary offers a really important contribution.
Okay.
It sees masking as this crucial missing piece in how DSM understands autism.
Uh-huh.
Because masking isn't just about changing your behavior on the surface.
Right.
It often takes huge amounts of mental and emotional energy.
Okay.
And it can have some serious consequences for a person's well-being and their sense of self.
Makes sense.
Now, spectral binary often associates masking with a very high frequency signature.
High frequency meaning?
Think of it as a really intense signal.
Okay.
Usually somewhere between 0.82 and 0.94 on its scale. And this often goes along with people reporting a lot of inner distress.
Like they're exhausted from keeping up the mask all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. And feeling like they're disconnected from who they really are.
So by noticing this high frequency pattern, spectral binary could actually be a red flag for masking.
It could be.
Even if the clinician doesn't directly ask about it or observe it.
Right.
That could be a really powerful tool for clinicians.
I think so.
So how could that change how someone with autism is supported?
Well, for one thing, it could lead to a much deeper understanding of their needs.
Kaya.
If clinicians recognize how much energy masking takes,
yeah,
they might start thinking about ways to reduce that need to mask.
Right.
Maybe by focusing on creating environments that are more accepting and accommodating.
Okay.
And also addressing things like burnout and the mental health challenges that can come with masking for a long time.
So it's not just about labeling the traits.
Right.
It's about understanding how much effort it takes to navigate a world that's not really built for you. Okay, so the third thing we wanted to look at with ADHD and autism is how the DSM thinks about how symptoms can vary depending on the context.
Right.
It often looks for symptoms to be persistent and impairing across different settings.
Right.
What's spectral binary's take on this?
Well, the thing is, while the DSM wants to see that consistency, it sometimes misses how big of an impact the environment can have.
Right.
Someone might have a lot of trouble in an environment that's super demanding or overstimulating.
Makes sense.
But then function much better in a calmer, more structured setting.
Uh-huh.
Spectral binary uses this idea of environmental resonance to try and measure this interaction.
Okay.
It's about understanding how a person's internal tone interacts with their surroundings.
So if someone is highly sensitive to sensory input and they're in a really loud, chaotic environment,
right,
that mismatch could amplify certain frequencies.
Yeah.
Which could lead to more distress or make their impairment seem worse.
Exactly.
Even if their underlying tone is pretty stable. So where the DSM might see that lack of consistent impairment as a reason to doubt the diagnosis.
Right.
Spectral binary sees that variability as important information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It tells us about the interplay between the person and their environment.
And that needs to be factored in.
Exactly.
So we've talked about how spectral binary critiques the DSM's limitations.
Mm-hmm.
But it also offers some alternatives, right?
It does.
You called it the spectral prescription.
Yep.
What do these alternatives actually look like?
Okay, well, one key idea is these emotional resonance charts.
Emotional resonance charts.
Yeah. Imagine them as visual maps.
Okay.
Kind of like waveforms that show the intensity of different emotional and behavioral frequencies over time.
So not just a checklist at a single point in time.
Right.
But a way to track how things change.
Yeah, in different environments.
Like at home, at school, at work.
Exactly. And in different relationships, too.
So you get this much richer, more personalized picture.
That's the idea.
What other alternatives does spectral binary suggest?
Okay, well, another one is dynamic profile scores.
Dynamic profile scores.
Instead of those rigid, you have to meet this many criteria rules in the DSM.
Right.
These profiles would score people on a wider range of tonal dimensions.
So more like a spectrum.
Exactly.
What kind of dimensions are we talking about?
Well, for example, they could measure the masking load.
Meaning?
How much effort someone is putting into masking.
Okay.
They could also look at the degree of their sensory sensitivities.
Right.
And even something called chronoception distortion.
Chronoception distortion.
Yeah. It's about differences in how people experience time.
Can you break that down a little bit?
Sure. So for some people, time might feel like it's moving too fast.
Okay.
Making it hard to keep.
Uh-huh.
While for others, it might feel like it's dragging.
And that can make it hard to get started on things.
Exactly. And this subjective experience of time can really affect how someone functions in everyday life.
Yeah, I can see that.
And it's something the DSM doesn't really address.
Right.
So the goal of these dynamic profile scores is to give a more complete and nuanced understanding than just ticking boxes on a checklist.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned something else called diagnostic poetics.
Yes.
That sounds pretty different from the usual ways of diagnosing people.
It is.
How does that fit in with this whole spectral approach?
Well, sometimes the best way to understand someone's inner world isn't to ask them direct, literal questions.
Okay.
So diagnostic poetics encourages people to use things like metaphor imagery, even tone poetry.
Tone poetry.
Yeah, using language that really evokes specific feelings and sensations.
Okay.
To describe what's going on inside.
So it's a more artistic and subjective way of expressing themselves.
Exactly.
And then these expressions are interpreted and translated into emotional frequencies.
Right.
And that might reveal things that traditional questioning wouldn't.
It could. It's about tapping into a deeper level of self-expression.
That's really fascinating.
It is.
Now, what about the environments where people live and interact?
Yeah, good point.
Does spectral binary say anything about how those environments could be shaped?
It does. It talks about frequency-adaptive environments.
Okay.
And the idea is to train therapists, educators, caregivers, basically anyone who works with people, to become more tuned in to an individual's resonance profile.
So they can tailor the environment to that person's needs.
Exactly. That could mean adjusting the emotional environment, the sensory environment, even the cognitive environment.
So it's about creating a more harmonious external environment that works with the person's internal tone.
Exactly.
And the goal is to reduce dissonance and promote well-being.
Right.
Okay. And lastly, there's the idea of integrated scorecards.
Mm-hmm.
How do those bring all these elements together?
So the integrated scorecards create this holistic and dynamic profile of the individual.
Okay.
They combine data from all the different sources, like the emotional frequency maps, the assessments of environmental sensitivities, the measures of masking levels, even the insights from diagnostic poetics.
So it's really pulling from everything.
Yeah, it's about going beyond just identifying a bunch of traits and really understanding the person's overall tone.
That unique mix of their inner and outer experiences.
Exactly, and remembering that it's constantly in motion.
So if I'm hearing you right, the message of spectral binary isn't that the DSM is totally wrong.
Not necessarily.
It's more like saying it's only listening to a limited range of frequencies.
That's a good way to put it.
It needs to become a more sensitive instrument.
Yeah.
To really understand the complexity of the human mind.
Absolutely. It's a fundamental shift in how we think about mental health.
Moving away from just fixing what's wrong.
Right.
To understand the unique frequencies that each person is expressing.
Exactly. And spectral binary reminds us that mental health isn't a fixed state.
It's not like a broken machine that needs to be repaired.
Right. It's more like a constantly evolving harmony.
Sometimes with dissonant notes.
Yeah.
Sometimes with beautiful melodies.
Uh-huh.
But always changing.
And through this spectral lens, diagnosis becomes less about categorizing and labeling.
Right.
And more about empathy.
About really trying to tune in to the person's experience.
It's a collaborative process.
Where the individual and the clinician are working together to understand that person's unique resonance within the world.
Yeah, it's a beautiful way to think about it.
So maybe in the future, instead of focusing so much on diagnostic labels,
yeah,
we might start by asking, what's your frequency today?
I love that. It acknowledges that individual experience is dynamic and multifaceted.
So for you, our listener, we want to leave you with this thought.
Okay.
How might this idea of tonal fields and resonance go beyond just diagnosis?
Right.
Could it be a new way to appreciate the diversity of human experience?
Mm-hmm.
The different ways people see the world, their personalities, their interactions with others?
Mm-hmm.
What might we learn if we really started listening for the frequencies in ourselves and in those around us?
That's the question we want to leave you with.
In this deep dive, we've been exploring the ideas from the article, Using Spectral Binary to Examine and Expand the DSM-5 Framework.
It's a fascinating piece.
And it definitely gives us a new way to think about what it means to be human.
I agree.
So thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.
We'll see you next time.
See you then.